Hey, welcome to Your Turn, Mike Causey. Glad to have you with us today. And we're always talking about following the money. We are really going to follow the money today. My guest is Arthur Stein. He's a financial planner with an amazing background, and he's been following the TSP, the Thrift Savings Plan, as closely as anybody around. Arthur, thank you for coming in.
Thank you, Mike.
Hey, just really quick, your background absolutely fascinates me. You worked on the Hill with the House Ways and Means Committee.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting, Mike. I started in 1975, one of the very first issues I worked on the first week was raising the debt ceiling.
Oh, here we go.
And it was, the arguments were so similar, and you know, the Democrats were in control, so the Republicans opposed it, raising the debt ceiling. And as you know, when the Republicans are in power, the Democrats tend to oppose raising the debt ceiling. Everybody thinking that, yeah, it's going to get done, but we want to, like,
get in our licks, huh?
Get in our licks.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I did was I accompanied the chairman of the committee, who was at the time Al Ullman from Oregon, to the House Rules Committee to try and get a rule to let us take the increase in the debt ceiling to the floor. And, you know, it was just these same arguments, the debt's so high. And then there was a chairman, Ullman, going, yes, but we've already spent the money. And it was
same
just
old,
like,
same old.
Same old, same old. That was like 38 years ago.
And yet, it's really, at the same time, deadly serious, isn't it?
Well, this time, I think it's much more deadly serious because it's, you know, it seems as if they're, it actually could happen, which would be horrible, and nobody knows how horrible or in what ways. And there is a group of people, you know, politicians, elected members of Congress, who seem to be entertaining the possibility that they could let this happen, and it's horrible.
Yeah, they want seats on the Hindenburg and the Titanic. Let me.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, and one of the things that worries me is I look at sequestration, which everybody said, well, they'll never do that. They'll never let that go into effect. It's too crazy. And now it's been in effect for, you know, a long time.
9 years to go, too.
Yeah.
Well, they couldn't have you at a more interesting time here because of the situation. The shutdown's bad. The sequestration is bad for many people. But people are talking about the default. If this happens, it could cause a, it could re-trigger the recession here, cause a worldwide recession or depression. Again, we don't know how bad it would be, but virtually all of the experts say really, really bad.
Yeah.
And got a couple of questions from listeners, and then we'll go back to it.
Okay.
Here's one from a woman. She says, within a year or two of retirement, I want to preserve our funds during this rocky time. Will the G Fund still do that if there is a default on debt, even temporary? What are the rules here? Are there any? My husband, I guess he's private sector, does not have a G Fund option, only standard stock and bond funds in his 401k. So I'm just looking at what's best, the best option is. Thank you, close reader and subscriber, close to retirement.
Okay, well, first of all, as far as I know, the G Fund is completely safe. I mean, that's what the TSB board says, and I have no reason to doubt them. Second thing is, when doing your retirement planning, you really need to focus on not so much your retirement date as on the date when you will need to start taking money from your investments to live on. And with a lot of federal employees, because they have such a great annuity, such a great pension, many of them retire and don't expect to take money from their investments for 10 or more years. Well, at that point, all their money is a long-term investment. But anybody who's getting to the point they expect to need funds from their investments in 3 to 5 to even 10 years, yeah, they want to get that money out of the stock market. And they can do what's called a bucket strategy, where you would have, you know, figure out how much money you're going to need from your investments in the next 3 years and put that in bank accounts and CDs and money market funds. Or if you're in the TSP, put it in the G Fund. Then figure out how much money you're going to need the next, say, 3 to 7 years or 3 to 10 years. Maybe that could go in the F Fund or something like that. Or if you're not in the TSP, have money not in the TSP, that could go into bonds that mature in those years.
How do you feel about the L funds, the life cycle funds?
The problem with the L funds is they are based upon the assumption that as people get closer to retirement, they should have less and less money in the stock market as a percentage of their investments. And I know of no academic research that supports that. basically, you know, when you look at the academic research, when you look at, you know, the different types of analysis that financial planners do, like what's called a Monte Carlo analysis, having large amounts of money, a large percentage of your assets in bonds is actually going to reduce the total amount of money that you could expect to take out of your investments over long periods of time. And that's a huge problem. And it's a huge problem with, for instance, the G fund, because that loses purchasing power every year. I mean, it's a rare year when the return on the G fund is more than the inflation rate. It's usually less than the inflation rate, which means it lost purchasing power. And over long periods of time, that's horrible. And the F fund, especially when you take into account taxes, and remember, you're going to pay taxes on the money you take out of the TSP unless you had some in a Roth. But you're going to pay taxes on it. After you factor in taxes and inflation, the purchasing power of the F fund probably doesn't go up and may go down.
Well, I've always thought that federal workers are in some ways almost unique in this country because, what, half of Americans don't have any kind of pension.
Yeah.
Of those that do have a pension, almost none, and I haven't found any, but the Employee Benefits Research Institute says it doesn't know of any the last time I checked, but almost none of them have any cost of living protection. So if you retire with $500 a month from Company X, 20 years from now, you continue to get $500 a month from Company X unless they've gone out of business. Whereas a federal worker has an annuity that's not only guaranteed for life, but I guess then some if you elect a survivor benefit, and it's indexed inflation in whole if you're CSRS and in part if you're under the FERS system. So wouldn't that make a difference? I mean, can't they walk on the wilder side?
Well, you know, federal employees aren't known for their wilder side, but it makes a huge difference. You know, CSRS employees frequently, you know, many of them retire with an 80% annuity. I mean, it's unbelievable with a full cost of living adjustment. And even FERS employees, they get a great pension, a great, you know, federal government calls it an annuity, but everybody else calls it a pension. Yeah. And it's got a great cost of living adjustment. And that's something that I haven't seen in any of the private sector. I occasionally see it in the, you know, state and local government, maybe. It's a huge advantage. The subsidy for health insurance is a huge advantage. Being able to time your retirement is a huge advantage because, and lots of people did this in 2008, you know, you could be 80 years old and just decide, well, I'm going to keep working. You can't do that usually in the private sector. And so federal employees have big advantages when it comes to retirement.
Yeah, and they should keep that in mind. It's not like your brother-in-law or your twin brother who works for a private sector company. You're different. Okay, question here. Says, I'm considering moving all my money into the G fund and continue to contribute the max allowed into the C, S, and I funds with the theory of buy low and sell high. However, my understanding is the G fund could also tank tremendously, or should I let it ride as I currently have it in and keep my money and contribute going as I did to the stock market through the recession?
Okay. You saw the question. First of all, you know, as I said, my understanding is the G fund cannot tank, that it's like, you know, America's best savings account. The money doesn't fluctuate in value, but it's got a much higher interest rate than a regular savings account. He makes a very important point, though, which so many federal employees miss, which is they can have a different strategy for the money they already have in the TSP balances, than they do for the money that's going in every 2 weeks into the TSP, their contributions. And you can be very, one strategy is to be very aggressive with your contributions, you know, putting them all in the stock funds, the C and the S and the I fund, because you're just putting in a little bit every 2 weeks. And if the market goes down, that's actually good for you because you're buying cheap. And be more conservative with the money that's already in there. Now, so he's saying, you know, exactly that. I'm thinking of switching some of my money that's already in there into the G fund, but to keep my aggressive contribution strategy. And at a minimum, I would do that. But it's hard for most people to try and time the market like that because, You know, once they switch that money out of the stock markets, and that's what the C and the S and the I fund invest in, when do you put it back in? When do you put it back in? It's very hard to time it. Nobody rings a bell and said it's going to start going up. And it often goes up when things look very grim because the stock market is a leading indicator. It goes up before the economy goes up. And what I find is that people usually are just better off to let it ride, take the hit, and you know, wait for the long term for the market to go back up.
Well, John Bogle, you know, the founder of the Vanguard funds, the godfather of the index funds, said in this very studio a couple of years ago, he said a couple of things. One is he said, I wish I could get in the thrift savings plan. He said, yeah. The best. This is the guy that founded Vanguard. But he said, I wish I could get into that. And the other thing he said was, I can't time the market. And I have never met anybody who could time the market.
See, that's it. And people that time the market, you know, they might get lucky and
once.
Well, they could get lucky 2, 3, 4 times. I mean, you just look at, you know, statistics. But then you get nailed. Yeah. And it's not worth trying to do. And especially if you're not a full-time investor, because suppose the market starts to move and you're in Europe.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you can miss the whole thing.
Need to take a short break here. We're talking with Arthur Stein, financial planner, about the Thrift Savings Plan. We'll be right back here on Federal News Radio, federalnewsradio.com.
The Guiding You Home Safely Report, provided and paid for by the National Air Traffic Controllers Association.
The Department of Transportation's updated its guidance for operating during a shutdown. Air traffic controllers, flight standards, field inspectors, hazardous materials safety inspectors, and commercial space launch overseers, among others, would be required to work. Facility security inspectors, routine personnel security background investigators, and aviation rulemakers would be furloughed. As a result, this will delay all next-gen initiatives.
Hi, I'm Trish Gilbert, Executive Vice President of the National Air Traffic Controllers Association. I've been an air traffic controller for more than 21 years. I chose this career because it gave me the chance to do something very important. Air traffic controllers like me take great pride in working hard to ensure the safety of 70,000 flights a day in U.S. airspace. We strive to reach the highest level of professionalism. So on your next flight, sit back and relax. We'll guide you home safely. Visit NATCA.org.
Ask the CIO is brought to you by Learning Tree International.
Ed Doris is the CIO in the Treasury Department's Office of the Comptroller of the Currency.
We have partnered with our economists where they've historically had jobs that would run for days, if not weeks, and we've introduced SaaS Grid Computing, where those jobs that used to take days and weeks are now hours or days.
Listen to Ask the CIO Thursday mornings at 10:30 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Get empowered with the IT skills you need to improve performance and help your agency achieve its goals. LearningTree is the number one provider of IT classroom training to the federal government, and they're on GSA IT 70 and MOBIS 874 schedules, which means all levels of the government and qualified contractors get the best tuition savings possible. Save even more with LearningTree's 50% off select IT and management courses each week. For 50% tuition savings, go to learningtree.com/CIO. That's LearningTree.com.
The leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.
Calling all government, military, and defense industry executives, the Association of the United States Army invites you to its 59th annual meeting and expo.
October 21st through the 23rd at the D.C. Convention Center, AUSA's annual meeting is one of the largest land warfare forums in the world.
Companies will gather to display the latest defense technology, and forums will be held for soldiers, family, government defense civilians, and industry executives.
Admission is free, limited to qualified persons. For details, visit AUSAannualmeeting.org.
We'll be right back. Hey, welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here, talking with Arthur Stein. He is a financial planner in the Washington area, based in, you're based in Rockville now?
Or no, I'm in Bethesda, Maryland. I have my own firm, Arthur Stein Financial, and the website is arthursteinfinancial.com.
ArthurSteinFinancial.com.
We're in Bethesda now.
Okay, we'll give that again in Bethesda. You brought in an interesting chart here. I was talking to you recently. I had a very good friend who worked for the Clinton administration, then left and went into the private sector, left her money in the TSP, came back, is now working for the Obama administration. But when the recession hit, she said, I can't take this, the dip in the TSP and whatnot. So she switched all of her money into the G fund. And I'm certainly not a financial planner, and I wasn't going to rock the boat, but I would not have done it. But she did. You looked into that, didn't you, kind of?
Yeah, I did. And, not unexpectedly, what I found was that if you just left your money in the C fund, you'd be better off today than if you had switched it all into the G fund and left it. What I looked at is, if you had $100,000and on December 31st, 2007, you switched it in the G fund, today you'd have $115,000. If you just left that $100,000 in the C fund and not made any more investments, you'd have $130,000, about 15% more. And if you continued to invest in either of those funds, the C fund would come out way ahead. One of the things that people forget is when they're not in the C fund, they're not benefiting from reinvested dividends, which go on all the time. And when the C fund is down, like it was in 2008, it ended up being down almost 40%, those reinvested dividends are buying a lot more shares than they do when it's up. And there's just a huge benefit from just staying the course.
Well, that's, again, it's a human trait, and you can't avoid being a human, you can't avoid being yourself. But when it seems to me that when people say, I lost a lot of money yesterday in the TSP, well, actually, I didn't lose anything. The fund went down, but it's not real money until you go. I mean, am I wrong?
Right. It goes up and down every day. So every day you're going to say, I made money or lost money. No, you shouldn't do that. You need to look at it. If it's a long-term investment, it's a long-term investment. If it's a short-term investment, it shouldn't be in the C or the S or the I fund because they are very volatile. They go up and down in value a lot. You don't want to have to cash out when it's down. But long-term, the stock funds have outperformed the G fund and the F fund, which are the, bond funds. I mean, the 10-year average annual rate of return for the C fund was 7%. Was only 5% for the F fund, which is the bond fund. It was only 3.6% for the G fund. I mean, that's a big difference, especially that's a 10-year average. It includes a 40% drop almost in 2008, and it still had a better 10-year average. This is really, it concerns me, especially when I speak to younger people and have, some of my clients are younger and they're not investing in stocks and they could be like 30 years old. It's just like, no, you need to think way ahead. And that's why I said earlier, even when you retire, some of your money is money you're going to need in 10, 20, 30 years. And that should be invested differently than the money you're going to need in 3 or 4 or 5 years.
Right. And then this idea of investing for the long haul, too, as you said before the break, and I've talked to other financial planners about this, and they say when you jump in and out of the market, you have to be right twice. You have to leave.
Absolutely.
You have to leave at the right time for you, and then you have to return.
Get back.
And the coming back, as you pointed out, and I know someone, and this was several years ago, but he had a client in one of the recessions, one of the many recessions we had, who went out of the market and was still out 11 years later. He had not returned.
I know lots of people like that.
Yeah.
They were smart if they got out at the right time. And understand, most people, when they get out, the market's already gone down. So they're getting out at the wrong time.
Yeah.
And then the market goes up a little bit and they're going like, well, I didn't like it when it was low. A lower price. I certainly don't like it at a higher price, but as that price goes up, then they're less and less likely to get back in, but the market's making money for the people who are still in it.
Yeah, you got a chart here that says switch to G or stay in C. What does that mean? Date December 31, 2007.
Yeah, again, this is like if you had 100,000 and on December 31st, 2007, what would be the result if you put it in the C fund and left it or put it in the G fund and left it? And, you know, even though in 2008, the C fund investment would have been down 37%, you know, as of today, you'd have a lot more money if you just left the money in the C fund.
And this is the hardest thing for people to...
But, you know, it's one of the reasons, Mike, people need to think about having a financial planner is because they need someone who's not going to be quite as... as going to be as emotionally involved as they are with their own money.
Yeah. How far do you go to... probably using the wrong word to push, but you see somebody like my friend who says... It's 2007. I can't stand it. I'm getting out. I'm going in the G fund, and you know from experience that's probably a very bad move. Maybe 100% bad. Maybe 50% bad. How hard do you push on that?
Well, you know, I push. I explain. I educate. I do a risk profile, and what I do, you know, I manage investments for people, and we come up with a compromise, which is a certain percentage in bonds and a certain percentage in stocks. And the percentage is going to vary according to who I deal with, you know, how nervous they are about the market, but also when are they going to need the money. And remember, for a lot of people, just going from G to F could increase their return over the long term. Now, the F fund right now is, you know, to me, precarious because if interest rates go up, the F fund's going to go down in value. The F fund's already gone down in value. You know, this year it's down about 1.6%. And if interest rates continue to increase, it's going to continue to go down in value. So there's a case if you're investing every 2 weeks and it goes down in value, that's good for you. But if you have money in it, not so good.
Well, your point, too, is well taken about touching the money. When do you touch it? Because so many people say, I'm going to retire next week. But government workers, this may have changed, but at one point, the average age of retirement was 61, which is pretty young. Private sector, it's mid-60s, you know, and maybe even higher now. But if you retire at 61, you've got an annuity, a pension, indexed inflation, in whole or in part, you've got these other benefits, as you said. You may not need to touch that money until you have to.
I would say this. If you're retiring, you're a federal employee and you're retiring, and you need to start taking money out of your investments right away, you need to really think hard about not retiring.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're 90 and that's happening, sure. But if you're 61... or 65 or even 70 and you're retiring, you have to start taking money out of your investments right away to live on, and not just a TSP, but any investments, you cannot live on your annuity. That's a signal that maybe you shouldn't retire yet.
Yeah, this is advice that I've heard people give about buyouts. You know, you get a $25,000 buyout, it's 18 or less after deductions, but people say, well, I really need the money. Well, if you need to trade $18,000 for a steady job that pays you every 2 weeks, don't take the buyout.
Yeah. You know, I actually finally had a client who benefited from a buyout. You know, she retired 2 months early and took the buyout. And all the other people I've had, you know, they weren't going to retire like for another year. And a $25,000 buyout did not compensate them for a year less of salary and the additional annuity that they would have received.
Good. Lauren Larson has given us the wave here. We need to take a short break. We'll be right back here on Federal News Radio, federalnewsradio.com.
True innovation means anticipating challenges before they occur. Lockheed Martin was early to recognize the changing nature of naval warfare. New types of threats in coastal waters called for a new kind of combat ship. we responded with deep thinking for shallow waters, designing the Littoral Combat Ship with speed, agility, and the most networked sensors of any surface combatant. And to make sure commanders stay one step ahead of evolving missions, the LCS is built on a flexible C-frame with interchangeable mission modules. It offers the operational flexibility to execute focused missions such as anti-submarine, mine, and surface warfare, providing access and dominance in the coastal battle space like never before. The LCS is one more example of our ongoing commitment to those who are meeting the security challenges of today and tomorrow. Lockheed Martin. We never forget who we're working for.
Do you hear that? That's a zettabyte, the amount of data the world generates every 6 months. 5 times more data than the combined storage of every hard drive on Earth. In a sea of data this huge, Raytheon Cyber Solutions deliver security, efficiency, and resiliency. After all, when your mission is cyber, every bit matters. Raytheon, customer success is our mission. Do you hear that? That's a hurricane, packing winds at 100 miles per hour. But we're keeping forecasters ahead of the storm with the world's most advanced weather monitoring capabilities. It's another way Raytheon technology helps civil and government agencies collect, process, and share intelligence with renowned precision. After all, when your mission is predicting the weather, the forecast calls for innovation. Raytheon. Customer success is our mission.
When faced with opportunities and challenges, it's important to have a reliable information technology partner on your side. Make a confident choice with GovConnection. Our extensive experience serving the federal marketplace ensures we can identify and apply the right purchasing vehicles to equip your organization with the right tools to accomplish your mission. The IT marketplace is full of companies who claim to be different. Choose GovConnection. Call 800-800-0019. Sponsored by Fluke Networks. Technology, expertise, and reliability that expands capability while reducing cost.
Federal News Radio wants your thoughts on the government shutdown. Call our comment line today at 202-274-4806. 202-274-4806.
Newsmakers, on the federal drive, the Merit Systems Protection Board Chairwoman Susan Sway Grunman shares a slice of her life as a leader trying to run an agency during the shutdown.
There's no mail, there are no calls, there are no pleadings that are being filed, and there are no e-appeals. So right now, it is just the three members here. The board members are accepted employees by virtue of our presidential appointment and our Senate confirmation.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive.
So welcome back to Your Turn Here, talking with Arthur Stein. He's a financial planner in the Bethesda, Maryland area. Arthur, would you give your call sign again, please?
Yeah, my website is ArthurSteinFinancial.com, and my email address is art@ArthurSteinFinancial.com, and I do investment management and financial planning.
And we've been getting questions in here from listeners and readers, and if we don't get to any on this show, we will answer you. I'm using the royal we. You will answer them, please. In my name. Here's one for
Chris.
Thank
you for volunteering.
Yes, and call him home after midnight. He's an insomniac. This is from Chris in Alexandria. She said she's a new hire. My investments are split 30% in the C fund. That's the S&P 500. 30% in the S fund, which is the rest of the market, the 4,500. And 30% in the I and 10%, I's international market, 10% in the G fund. That's the Treasury securities. Here's the key question. Should I maintain or should I switch it all to the G fund at some point?
Well, even if you're going to switch it to that G fund, the point is decades in the future when you're close to retirement. And as a new hire, I'm assuming you're in your, you know, 20s or 30s. I mean,
yeah,
whatever. And what I would say, as far as the new money going into the TSP, the allocation you have is, you know, a good allocation. It's aggressive, but it's for the new money going in. And actually, I don't know why you would on a monthly basis be investing in the G fund at all. That 10% that's going into G every 2 weeks, you might as well just put it in the F fund. Yeah, the F fund could go down if interest rates go up, but that's only going to benefit you. And there are not too many periods of time of any length where the F fund did not outperform the G fund.
Yeah, the F fund is sort of the mystery. I think most people, myself included, really don't understand what bonds are all about, and yet they think somehow they're safe when not necessarily.
Yeah, bonds fluctuate in value every minute of every day as interest rates fluctuate, and the value of the F fund certainly fluctuates. And you know, you can only look, you know, if you look at the monthly returns. I mean, you know, the F fund was down, for instance, 1.78% in May. That's in 1 month. It was down 1.53% the following month. Now, you know, year to date, it's down 1.6%. And over the last 12 months, it's up 4.29%. I mean,
the shorter
the time period you look at, the greater the fluctuations are going to look.
Yeah. Here's one that I'll bet a lot of people are thinking about and asking, and I've heard it a number of times as we approach this debt ceiling thing, which, as you said at the top of the show, nobody really knows how bad it would be if we default, but virtually everybody agrees it would be really, really bad, you know, possible recession, all that. Here's from Jonathan in Annapolis. He says, a good strategy would be to move all funds to the G fund until the debt ceiling is resolved, and then quickly move them back once it's resolved. So you go into the G fund right now, fearing the debt ceiling is going to be breached, and then once it's, quote, over, move back out of the G fund. What about that?
Well, if you got the timing right and the market didn't move in the meantime and the TSP let you do that, then it might work, you know, and I hope I've qualified that enough. But I think for many people, they're not going to make it work. And I am also not sure and whether the TSP will let you move in and out, you know, within a matter of days.
Yeah.
Into the G fund, out of the G fund. I mean,
protecting you from yourself in a way.
Yeah.
I've forgotten. There was
I'm
a
thinking
big
that there are some requirements
trading.
About that. And so people need to be careful about that. And I'm sure there's some TSP expert out there, and maybe they could email us while we're on the air, because that would be an important point.
Yeah.
I didn't think to look it up.
That reminds me of when I was at the Washington Post. I planted grape arbors. So I have four grape arbors, and I was going to grow my own wine, not knowing how many grapes it takes to make a bottle of wine. But the garden editor at the Post was a sweet guy, and brilliant and funny and everything else. And I asked him, I said, I planted these, and I put lime around them. And then I decided to ask him, I said, is it a good idea? And he said, well, it won't kill them. You know, and I made my point. So moving into the G fund and out again won't kill you, but it definitely might not help.
But did we ever get a quasi Cabernet?
No, not yet. Not yet. It's peaking this year.
Okay.
You got some other interesting charts here. Arthur, what are these talking about?
What are these charts? Well, the other
They're
one...
impressive.
Yeah, I know it. And they actually mean something, which is even more professive. The one you're looking at now, I think the horizontal one, I was just looking at, you know, what's been the effect of the shutdown on the stock market? And it's been, although the market's been down and down and down last 2, 3, 4 days, it's actually been very minor. The C fund peaked in September of this year at 22, and it was 18 at the beginning of the year. Then went up to 22, and on the day before the shutdown began, it was up to it was still around 22 as of. Last night, I guess it was down to about 21.5. So, you know, there's been some very minor consequence, but the C fund's still up 19.5% for the year. So lots of people were worried about the C fund because of their, worried about the shutdown and the effect that it would have on the stock market. I'm sure there are people out there who took money out of the C fund as a result. And, you know, it just has not benefited them to any great extent.
Yeah, I mean, as you said, you've got to get the timing almost exactly right two times.
Yeah. And, you know, let's face it, if they today announce a deal, you know, the market is likely to go up a lot in a very short period of time. And we may see, you know, most of the snapback happen in one day.
Mm-hmm. And you would be out of it, and then when you bought back in, you'd be buying high. Huh?
You'd be buying high. Yeah. You know, there have been a lot of studies of how the average investor does, and the average investor does much worse than even the mutual funds that they invest in. And they've been doing these studies for a long, long time, and they just find that people who invest in mutual funds tend to underperform the mutual fund because they buy at the wrong times. They get excited about something when it's already gone up. They get discouraged when it goes down, so they're buying high and selling low and losing money instead of buying when it's low and selling when it's high.
I don't know if it's an urban myth, but Joe Kennedy, the father of President John F. Kennedy and Robert Kennedy, he made a lot of money in the market, and they said he got out in 29, according to the legend, right before the crash, I guess October, and they said the factor was he came outside of his office building in New York, and the shoeshine boy and the newspaper vendor were arguing about their stocks, and he said, I'm out of here.
Yeah. I don't know if that's true or not. Yeah. I've heard that similar story about some other great investor that when his shoeshine boy started giving him tips, it was time to get out.
I like that better. I like that version better. I think we're going to be taking a short break here in a minute, but Arthur, would you give your call sign one more time?
My website is ArthurSteinFinancial.com, www.ArthurSteinFinancial.com.
Very good. Okay. Listen, thank you for being with us. We're going to take a short break here and talk with Sean Riley from the Federal Times.
Thank you, Mike.
Back here on Federal News Radio, federalnewsradio.com. So,
look who came to Virginia this weekend. Ted Cruz, the Republican senator from Texas who's the leader of the government shutdown. Cruz came in to campaign for another radical Republican, Ken Cuccinelli. So don't believe Cuccinelli's ridiculous ads, because supporting a government shutdown is nothing new to Cuccinelli. In 2008, he tried to defund Planned Parenthood and brought Virginia's government to a standstill. And in 2004, Cuccinelli said he wished Virginia Republicans would shut down the government over Governor Mark Warner's bipartisan budget. So it's no surprise that Cuccinelli supports the Tea Party in Congress now. It's Terry McAuliffe who's joining Common Sense Americans in asking that we open the government and stop the political games that are hurting Virginia families. Let's reject Cruz's and Cuccinelli's extreme approach. It's Terry McAuliffe who offers the common sense leadership Virginia needs.
I'm Terry McAuliffe, candidate for governor, and this ad was sponsored by Terry McAuliffe for governor.
What two dimensions are necessary for effective collaboration? How can agency leaders and OMB foster cross-agency collaboration as a way of doing business? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and more with Dr. Jane Fountain, author of the IBM Center Report, Implementing Cross-Agency Collaboration, A Guide for Federal Managers, next week on the Business of Government Hour. Tune in every Monday at 11 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Central Michigan University's global campus in Metro D.C.
I'm looking to
move up in my career,
make my mark in government,
keep my job, and still earn my degree. Earning my Master's of Public Administration degree from Central Michigan University's Global Campus gave me direction in my career in public service. The instructors were more like mentors. They helped me to hone in on exactly what it is that I wanted to do.
The possibilities are endless with a quality degree from Central Michigan University's Global Campus, backed by exceptional service and a deep respect for the adult learner. Get it all at CMU's 7 local centers, Central Michigan University's global campus in Metro DC. Call 877-679-1268 or go online at cmich.edu/metro-dc. That's cmich.edu/metro-dc.
They're dreaded words on the outside of a box, assembly required. But it might not be long before products assemble themselves. Instead of spending your weekend building a new purchase from a box full of parts, imagine gathering those pieces together, providing a bit of energy, a shake, a little heat or electricity.
And then they can start to connect to one another. And if you can guide them into connecting in the right ways, you can have the parts assemble themselves and assemble in highly precise structures.
Skylar Tibbetts, an architect and computer scientist at MIT, is engineering materials pre-programmed to change shape and interact in very specific ways, and he's not aiming small.
self-assembly is a phenomenon that we see at nano and micro scales predominantly in biology and chemistry or material science, but we're trying to use that as a technology for manufacturing, construction, or the industrial sector.
More at nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
A new pilot program from the U.S. Postal Service promises citizens the ability to access everything from federal health benefits to student loan information with just one ID and password. Using a cloud service hub, agencies will be able to accept citizen credentials, but this will also change authentication and access procedures. Join FC at Bethesda October 16th at the Bethesda North Marriott as federal leaders discuss challenges faced by agencies as they transition to the next generation of identity and access management. Register today at fcabethesda.org/OCTbreakfast.
Mike Causey here. Welcome back. And we had talking with Arthur Stein, a financial planner in the Washington area. A lot of good advice. If you missed it or want to hear it again or pass it on to a friend, all of our shows are archived here on our homepage at Federal News Radio, so you can listen anytime and some good advice from him. Now, more good advice. We're going to go to Sean Riley, senior writer for the Federal Times. Sean, are you with us?
I am. How are you, Mike?
The cliche these days is saying, is anything happening?
Oh, it's such a quiet day. Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, where to begin? I don't know if you heard Arthur Stein, but he's part of his background. He's also a professor in Australia at one point, but he worked on the House Ways and Means Committee, and when he went there, I think he said it was 1975, but one of the very first things he did was accompany the chairman of the committee over to another committee. They were dealing with the debt limit crisis, so it goes back that far.
There's nothing new under the sun, is there?
Nothing new under the sun, but so many people agree that this time it seems to be worse. The danger seems to be greater, the danger of default.
Yeah, I would say, contrary to what I just said, I mean, the two sides, in this case, you got President Obama and Senate Democrats on one side, House Republicans on the other, they do seem to be dug in pretty significantly in a way that, and I think this is what's triggering a lot of concern, it's going to be hard for either side to back away or find any wiggle room in their positions. And, you know, this began, of course, with the government shutdown that began October 1st, but now it's increasingly merging into concerns that there'll be a failure to reach an agreement on raising the nation's borrowing limit, which we're, depending on who you believe, we're going to the country will run out of credit essentially sometime around anywhere between October 17th and November 1st.
Have you been researching? Because we're starting to hear from people who get veterans benefits, people who get Social Security, and of course civil service retirement benefits as to what happens if we go over the cliff.
Well, I think the Treasury Department, most I could say is the Treasury Department has an enormous management challenge on its hands, because I believe it would be up to, you know, be up to them to decide how to prioritize payments. You're talking about losing essentially or being able to underpay, not being able to pay perhaps around one-third of total outlays, given if you can't borrow anymore. And so the question would be, how do you prioritize? You know, one option would be just to pay bills as they come in. I think there's been some legislation introduced in Congress that would require the Treasury Department to make interest payments on the nation's debt first, you know, as a way of one, you know, the goal anyhow is to avoid rattling the financial markets. So I think there's some question whether that would actually succeed. But that if you do that, then that means that, you know, Social Security recipients, veterans, Medicare beneficiaries might not get their checks on time. So it'd just be, it'd just be a nightmare for the Treasury Department.
I talked to a government worker last night, and he said that he's been furloughed, and he, his wife, in fact, one of them was called back for a day and then furloughed again. But he said the next check he gets will be for 6 days' pay. And that's going to start hitting all over the place.
Absolutely. And, you know, this will be the last, you know, since the furlough began October 1st, I think the next pay period for a lot of federal employees is, you know, on or around October 15th. And as we've talked about in the past, I mean, a lot of federal employees do not make, you know, the six-figure salaries there. I was talking to union rep for federal correction officers a week or so ago. He was saying they start out around 31, 32,000, top out, I think, around 50,000. I mean, that doesn't include overtime, perhaps, but gives you an idea of the range. And, you know, for a lot of folks, it is paycheck to paycheck, particularly for those with families. And I think you're going to start seeing some impacts very quickly if this continues.
Well, it's interesting you'd use that particular example because there have been a friend just came back from a tour of the U.S., and he did Route 66, among other things. But he brought back the newspapers from Santa Fe and from Kansas and whatnot. And a number of the towns there, the front page story is that the government office is closing, and in some cases, some remote places, the primary employer in that area may be a VA hospital, and it may be a federal prison.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you see this all over again. And one from, I think, Pueblo, Colorado, and it said something about government printing office to close. And it, my, of course, my eye was drawn to it. I think of the GPO down by the Capitol. But this is a government printing office in Pueblo, Colorado. And in a place like Ogden, Utah, you've got Hill Air Force Base, the Internal Revenue Service Center there, and the Forest Service has a big operation. And that's about it for the employer in those areas. So some of these places are going to be hit much harder than Washington, not only in the numbers of people that work for the government, the percentage, but the salaries they make. They're not inside the Beltway salaries.
Great point. I mean, I believe the federal government is the largest employer in the state of Colorado, for example. And these are decent salaries in areas that, you know, economically may not have that much else going on. We all know, remember the late Senator Byrd, who made it a point of shipping as much of the federal government over to West Virginia as he could, and there was a reason for that. And without that, it's going to, you know, it's the economic effects will be felt very quickly. And it's a good reminder that the bulk of federal employees do not work or live in the Washington, D.C. area.
Yeah, I was talking to someone yesterday. They said that there are two direct flights daily from National Airport to Huntsville, Alabama, because that is a major federal center. And again, not a high wage area. And you've got the Research Triangle Park in Raleigh, Durham, Cary, North Carolina. So it's a huge government presence. And I think I saw this in the Post yesterday, but there was a chart put out by some group showing the impact on states, and Alaska was very hard hit. Colorado, as you said, very hard hit. I think Maryland was fifth. I would have figured Maryland and Virginia would be up there, and I believe Virginia was 14th. But there were a number of other states where the federal presence as a percentage of, I guess, the adult employment population is higher, much higher than it is here.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, you could say if there's any benefit, or at least from the federal employee perspective, to this shutdown, it is reminding people about what the federal government does, that it's not just an enormous bureaucracy that takes out, you know, sucks up tax dollars and produces nothing in return. It is part of it's part of communities all across the country, and that does work that is missed once it's not done.
Yeah, well, they think that the government is in its one or two big Quonset huts here in D.C.
Right.
John, what else are you cooking?
Well, we're keeping a close eye. I mean, there's pretty much it's all shut down all the time from our perspective. But, you know, one thing we're keeping a close eye on that I think is of enormous interest to federal employees who are still furloughed. Of course, a lot of DOD people have been brought back in the last week because of the Pay Our Military Act, is what's going to happen with legislation that would ensure that furloughed federal employees do receive back pay once if and when the shutdown ends. As we've talked about before, of course, after the 95-96 shutdowns, Congress did agree to do that. And I think somewhat to the surprise of federal employee unions and other advocates, the House on Saturday, unusual weekend session, passed by a 407-0 vote legislation that would guarantee back pay to furloughed feds. There was some hope that it would go through the Senate pretty quickly, but now Senator John Cornyn, who's the number two Republican in the Senate, has essentially said that he's tied this to efforts to get this bill to Republican efforts to get at least some agency, you know, continued funding for some agencies that have been in news, like VA, National Institutes of Health, FEMA, that kind of thing. So it seems unlikely that it's going to come to a vote this week. Meanwhile, in the House, the Republican leadership yesterday, again, on a very fast track basis, passed a separate bill for, again, ensuring back pay for furloughed federal employees, but tied it to a separate measure that would create a working group reminiscent of the famous super committee a few years ago to look at, you know, sort of broader federal spending and borrowing issues. It passed the House. Both bills passed the House. They're tied together as a package, but the White House has threatened to veto, and I say it's pretty unlikely the Senate is going to take them up.
If it wasn't for the economic impact of this, you know, the people who next week are going to get a two-week check for with 6 days' pay on it,
yeah.
This has a Gilbert and Sullivan aspect to it. It's almost like a comic opera. And now you have the Republicans in the House insisting that people who didn't work get paid, and you have the Democratic-controlled Senate as the place where that is cooling off. It's hard to figure who the players are here.
It really has scattered the playing board a bit, and I think when the back pay bill passed on Saturday, I couldn't help thinking that, you know, some of the people who voted for, some of the members of Congress who voted for it are those who regularly lambast the federal agencies for wasteful spending. And in this case, they're essentially voting to give federal employees a paid vacation. I mean, not the one that the federal
right.
workforce asked for, but there you are. And this is, you know, this is the doing of Congress.
Well, and you have this thing that was captured on TV and I think the front page of a number of newspapers, the park ranger mm-hmm. who was doing his duty.
Her duty, I think.
Her
it?
Duty. Okay.
Yeah.
And she said, but she was told not to let anybody on the ground. Then this honor flight comes on and a member of Congress joins it and says she should be ashamed. So mm-hmm. somebody should be ashamed, but I don't think it's her.
Yeah. And I think, and the congressman from Texas, you know, immediately got some pushback from another federal employee.
Yeah. Couldn't. Sean, Ron, thank you so much. We'll be doing this next week. Everybody have a good week. Stay safe.
Thanks, Mike.
Here's Rear Admiral Robert Day, CIO U.S. Coast Guard, on the Federal Executive Forum on Data Center Consolidation, sponsored by HP.
As an operator on the front lines, and I need a new capability, I'm basically going to be able to go to an enterprise catalog and say, I need this, I need it now, and I only need it for these 10 days. And literally, it's going to be no different than me going on to the internet now saying, I want a Google Plus account, I want this much storage in the cloud, and those types of capabilities.
To listen to the whole program, made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to FederalNewsRadio.com. Is your IT organization struggling with an outmoded data center that's ill-equipped to accommodate today's converged high-density IT infrastructures? If so, HP's data center transformation experts can work with you to analyze all of your options and help you select the solution that's right for you. From renovation to new construction, public, private, and hybrid cloud, co-location, and outsourcing, they're ready to help you throughout your journey of IT and facilities transformation to a future state that's more cost and energy efficient. To learn more, visit hp.com/go/federal.
Look who came to Virginia this weekend. Ted Cruz, the Republican senator from Texas who's the leader of the government shutdown. Cruz came in to campaign for another radical Republican, Ken Cuccinelli. So don't believe Cuccinelli's ridiculous ads, because supporting a government shutdown is nothing new to Cuccinelli. In 2008, he tried to defund Planned Parenthood and brought Virginia's government to a standstill. And in 2004, Cuccinelli said he wished Virginia Republicans would shut down the government over Governor Mark Warner's bipartisan budget. So it's no surprise that Cuccinelli supports the Tea Party in Congress now. It's Terry McAuliffe who's joining Common Sense Americans in asking that we open the government and stop the political games that are hurting Virginia families. Let's reject Cruz's and Cuccinelli's extreme approach. It's Terry McAuliffe who offers the common sense leadership Virginia needs.
I'm Terry McAuliffe, candidate for governor, and this ad was sponsored by Terry McAuliffe for governor.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.